Yes, Balte. You know, I was, while following what you were saying just now, when I'm seated meditating, yes, I recognize my knees paining, and there is a desire to sort of, straighten my leg. At that time, because I do the Mahasi Metta, shall I say, desire, and I find that sometimes it leaves me, that desire, and I'm concentrated at that time. So that is the third one you were saying, where I recognize it, and then as if it's, the pain is not there anymore. And then I continue to sit. But sometimes the pain is too great. So I was just wondering what I should do at that point, or should I mindfully, change my position?
Yeah, no, actually, as I mentioned, these bodily pains are unavoidable. So even the Buddha, even the Buddha and the Arahants went through bodily pains. Now, now actual problems happens because of the desire to get rid of it. So we have a some kind of a mental aspect that we are adding to it. So that is that is the real cause making us to suffer more. So if we can bear the bodily pain with a very sort of equanimous mind, so then we are only going through one type of suffering, that is the bodily type of suffering, physical suffering, but there is no mental component. So as we are, assume that as you've taken your own example, say there's a knee pain, so you, so there may be a desire to get rid of that knee pain. So that is, that is actually giving us some unhealthy situation in the mind, some uneasiness in the mind, kind of a resistance in the mind. And now there is even the, say, become even growing. I want to get rid of why this is happening, why it is still remaining there. So you want to be free from it quickly. So likewise, now uneasiness, restless situation happens in the mind. So now this restlessness, this uneasiness, this refusal, this unsatisfactoriness has to be understood. So once you understand that, then you have to be sort of honest enough to understand, now I have a kind of an expectation. I have a desire to get rid of this pain. So now that desire has to be recognized. So if we are able to recognize that desire, and we, if we can drop that desire, okay, I don't need to immediately get rid of this pain. Let me observe it. I can be patient with it. I can learn from this pain. So now you are taking from a different perspective. Now you don't have a desire to get rid of, but rather you change the attitude. Okay, now this is a pain. So pain is a kind of a object. So let me use this to understand suffering. Let me use it to see from all different possibilities. So likewise, now you investigate that pain. Now that the mental agony, mental sort of restlessness available previously, now it has gone. Now you can, if you pay your attention to the mind, so the some uneasiness, resistance previously available in the mind now has disappeared. Now you understood, okay, now mind has calmed down. Mind experience some tranquility, even though some bodily pain is there. So that is where the third noble truth is. Third noble truth you need to look at in the mind. Okay, previously mind was going through some uneasiness, restlessness, but now it is not there. Now you are calm. Mind is now peaceful. Body may be aching, can't help, but mind is calm.
Okay. So, following that question, but then the more I sit with that calmness, I mean, over time, I'm getting used to that calmness and I stay in that, isn't it?
Yes. So more and more we are learning how to maintain a peaceful mind amidst all these difficulties in a way. So may of course we always have to go through some difficulties, some day-to-day unsatisfactoriness. People are, say, for example, they are, say, your children. So we expect some sort of a behavior from them. Sometimes they are not behaving as we wish. So that makes us suffering. That makes us suffering. So that unsatisfactoriness, that sort of a burning in our own mind, if we are able to recognize it, so that is then we are operating the first noble truth, on the first noble truth. So we are our own unsatisfactoriness, own kind of mental despair, we can recognize. So once we recognize it, then we need to understand why this is happening. So what is the cause? So there is a kind of expectation that we expect our children to behave in a certain manner. There is a kind of a framework operating in our mind. So there's a this is the behavior pattern that they have to behave. So likewise, we have kind of a preconceived idea. So that is the one causing the suffering. Now, if we are able to let go of that expectation, then we can calm down ourselves. It does not mean that we allow the children to do whatever they want. Rather, we can guide them, we can advise them. But still, we don't need to suffer if they are not acting as we wish. Can't help. So we have done our part, we did our best, we tried to put them in the correct track. Again and again, we did our best. But if it's not working, then no point of suffering from my side. So likewise, even in our own day-to-day life, when we are going through some day-to-day unsatisfactoriness, so there also we can recognize the unsatisfactoriness, dukkha, and if there is a cause that we can recognize, that desire has to be let go of, and once the desire has been let go of, then we can experience some kind of a calmness. So that calmness also has to be appreciated. Typically, what happens is that this calmness is never appreciated. We simply ignore it.
But
So, yeah.
I seem to be appreciating it because I can see the process, the beginning.
Yeah.
That is, I recognize that there is dukkha,
Yeah.
and then I act on it. And then when I get to the calm, I appreciate it. And but there is a subtle desire to get to the calmness, which I mean, I'm working on it.
Yeah. Yeah. So even now, if there is, so while dwelling in the calmness, while dwelling
Yes.
in peacefulness, if we still desire something, so that still making a little, kind of a nick, kind of a
Dukkha.
dukkha, exactly.
Yeah.
So if we are now assume that you are completely contented, then
Yeah.
there can't be any kind of a desire, isn't
Okay.
it?
I mean, I suppose it I have to gradually work on it, isn't it?
Yes, definitely. So it's a kind of a gradual process. So
Yes.
there was a very strong unsatisfactoriness in the mind. Now it has reduced to a certain extent, but still there may be little unsatisfactoriness on which we have to work out, actually.
Yes,
Work on
yes,
it, yes.
yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm understanding how I go through the process, the
Yeah.
three,
Yeah.
and when I get to the calmness, I have to work on it. But thank you very much. I appreciate
Yeah,
it. May you be well.
you are welcome.
Thank you. I'd like to invite then Nanda to please ask the next question. Nandana.
Yes. Thank you, Jennifer. Bhante, my question is on dukkha. As you explained about the dukkha in its subtle states, obviously it's very easy for someone to understand the dukkha or unsatisfactoriness in the unpleasant feelings or unpleasant experiences. So my question is actually on the pleasant experiences. The dukkha that we are supposed to be experiencing in our present experiences, especially in the in the present experience also, we have different types of present experiences. Like there can be some present experiences that are very intense. For example, we gain ownership of something really valuable, something that we really wanted always. And then suddenly, once you get that ownership, you start having some agitation in the mind because you want to protect.
Exactly, yes.
So that kind of present experience, I understand dukkha involved in that.
Yeah.
Because we have that natural tendency to have that wanting to protect it, to safeguard it, protect it from others, and the fear that arises, somebody will damage it, somebody will take it, something like that. So that also I understand fully well. But the type of present experience I am kind of still I'm experimenting with this present experience, this very subtle present experiences, but I am still unable to sometimes see the dukkha in those. A good example, I want to just try and give you two examples actually. First example is like some kind of food that I enjoy. Let's say I'm having my breakfast. I'm enjoying it because it is a pleasant taste. And I am very mindfully eating. And I do know that I'm not going to be able to eat it forever. I'm just going to finish this breakfast at some point of time. And I'm mindful of the flavor that I have in my mouth. And I chew my food and I know, okay, I am going to eat it now and that's it. That's why this is my breakfast. And once it is done, it's done. And I have no fear of someone coming and grabbing it from me because I am in the safety of my own home. So at a time like that, I find it difficult to experience or to feel any dukkha in that kind of a present experience. That is my first picture.
Yeah. So actually, as far as I can understand, so we don't need to... Actually, there can't be any dukkha if there is no desire. Now, in this your situation, you are utterly mindful and you are eating. So, at that time, your mind does not experience any kind of a desire. So, since there is no desire, rather you are doing kind of an experiment. It is true that the body is going through some pleasant experience, but you are not attached to it. You don't hold it. You are not cling to it. So therefore, there is no mental unsatisfactoriness, uneasiness, because there was no desire. So you are not agitated, because there is no desire. So the various kinds of feelings are available every time, but if you are not attached to them, so there is no kind of unsatisfactoriness or suffering that we are experiencing. So the main thing is that if we desired it, then only the problem happens. So the problem is not that we always have to try to find kind of dukkha in the pleasant experience, in the unpleasant experience or the equanimous experience. At the very moment we attach to any of these three kinds of experiences, there the dukkha arises.
Thank you, Mother. That is exactly what I want to confirm.
Yeah.
Because I was born a Buddhist and I have always been taught that every experience, I mean, there is dukkha everywhere.
Yeah.
And in every experience that we have in our life. So it's through Shraddha or through faith, through faith, I kind of tend to always look for dukkha. Even the pleasant experience. So,
no, actually, there is another dimension actually we can check out. That is the other point that Buddha mentioned. So whatever is impermanent can lead to unsatisfactoriness. So yadanichang tang dukkang. So whatever is anicca, whatever is impermanent, inconstant, can lead to dukkha. So even the pleasant experience, if you closely look at it, so it is not a single experience, but rather it consists of a group of minute experiences. say, happy feeling, pleasurable feeling, it's not a single pleasurable feeling. It's a collection of minute pleasurable feelings, and each minute feeling is arising and passing away very rapidly. So each and every this kind of feeling, minute feeling, is subjected to this sort of process. So that means kind of a constant, it is arising and passing away. Constantly it is arising and passing away. So this is a very vulnerable situation. So therefore, we can't expect this kind of happy, pleasurable feeling to last for a long time, because it is a very vulnerable situation. We never know when it is going to change, when it is going to change to something else. So therefore, expecting lasting happiness, if we expect actually, if we expect lasting happiness from this present moment, present experience, then we are going to unhappy. But rather, once we know the nature, once we know the reality, so we let it be. Rather than we try to attach to it, rather than we try to possess it, rather than we try to hold it, we simply let it be. So the mind is peaceful. Mind has no desires. So we can be peace, we can maintain peace with these pleasant experiences. We can similarly maintain peace even with painful experiences. Similarly, we can maintain kind of peace of mind even with the equanimous feelings. So various types of bodily feelings are there, but we are our, if we consider the mind, mind is peaceful. So that is why we can say the mind kind of unwavering, unshakable, irrespective of the type of bodily experience that we are going through.
So, is it correct to say, Bhante, that it is not the impermanence per se or impermanence itself of an experience that makes it dukkha, but it is the person who is experiencing it, if that person is not has not realized that it is an impermanent, that is when dukkha arises.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. So, he hasn't realized the reality. So he is expecting permanence in an impermanent situation. Sorry, in an impermanent situation. So there we are trying to go against the current. So
yeah, right.
It is constantly
so
changing, but
I,
we are trying
to confirm that.
Yeah, in a complete flow of situation, we are trying to fix. But it is constantly flowing. Constantly changing, but we are looking at it in a permanent sense. So that is where the perversions is coming to the picture. Now everything is in a kind of a flux. Everything is constantly changing. It is inconstant. But unfortunately, we want to fix it. We are going through a kind of a fixation. We want to have a permanent something in this whole impermanent transient nature. So that is where the unsatisfactoriness is going to happen.
Right. Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah.
That is very clear.
Yeah.
Thank you. And I'd like to invite Chitta to ask the next question.
Yes, thank you. Bhante, I have just a couple of brief questions. The first one is leading from the previous question. Just what the advice that Buddha gave to Manuka Buddha and the other Bahia, we can see beautiful paintings or beautiful nature and appreciate it, but drop it there as seeing a scene. Would that be correct to say that?
Yes, that we can say so, because we are not making any story out of it. We are not making any formations in the other scenes. So, actually this dukkha, actually another three types are there, calling dukkha dukkha, viparinama dukkha and sankhara dukkha. Dukkha dukkha is the typical bodily pains and the obvious kind of pain. And then the viparinama dukkha is the dukkha, the unsatisfactoriness caused because of the change. Sankhara dukkha is the one happening because of our fabrication, because of the construction, because of the formations. Now, what you are saying here is that we stop that formations, we stop this fabrication. So therefore, that dukkha, that type of dukkha is not available there. So that is the approach actually Buddha is taking. So this sankhara dukkha, so what we, the constructions that we do, the formations that we do, the fabrications that we do, we are trying to calm down. So once they calm down, once all the fabrications are calmed down, once all the sankharas are calmed down, then mind is peaceful.
Yes, and even seeing a beautiful human being, I mean, yes, Buddha has told us how to break it up and feel good bhavana and all this, but even to see a beautiful form, you can say it's a beautiful form and then drop it there.
True, true. Yeah, I mean, if we are not attached to it, if there is no desire to that beautiful form, then internally you can't feel any unsatisfactoriness. Beauty is beauty. So there's a very beautiful verse coming in the Nibbedika Sutta. There Buddha mentioned, Tithanti chitrani tateva loke atitta dhira vinyanti chanda. So these beautiful things remain as it is in the world. But the person, the wise person, actually, he tamed the desire in the mind. So,
yes.
So the beautiful things are not the problem.
Absolutely, and yeah. The fact is that there are very intricate, architecturally and hand woven and handmade, incredibly beautiful
yes.
in this world.
Exactly.
So we cannot say that there isn't anything like that.
Yes. Yes. So actually, even I have to give you even another example. Now you know Venerable Mahakassapa. He actually was a worldly. I mean, after he became a monk, only 7 days only he was a worldly person. After 7 days, he became fully enlightened. That means, I mean, he became an arahant. But you know, there is in Theragata. Now he was dwelling using practicing austere practices to the fullest, and he was dwelling in a very thick forest. Now, while being there, he during the night he is observing these flyer flies. You know the flyer flies?
Yes, but
so now these fireflies, as they are flying, so it's a kind of very beautiful picture.
Yes.
So, I mean, if you have been in a very, say, forest environment during the night, so when, during a very thick, dark forest, so when these little creatures, flies, the flying here and there and flocking to a particular tree, it's like a kind of LED bulbs. I mean, it's a very beautiful scenery.
Yes.
So, Venerable
yes,
Maha...
They are beautiful even in this world.
Yes.
Stop all the lights and observe them. they have some beauty about them.
Yeah. So Venerable Mahakassapa mentioned that he see the beauty there. So while being an arahant, the only thing
is that he sees the
beauty there, but he is not attached to it. There is no desire to it. So there is no raga, a lust in his mind. So therefore, if we say that the arahants or Buddha can't enjoy the beauty, that is, we can't say it is correct, because
it's not correct.
Because now Buddha was served by the kings, very very say rich merchants, so they have given very tasty food. So at that time Buddha, I don't know the correct term is the enjoyment, but Buddha has experienced some pleasant feelings. But there is no desire for those pleasant feelings. So that is the difference. So that's a statement. Rasa patisangvedi cha bhagava, no cha rasa raga patisangvedi. So Buddha experienced all these very pleasant experiences. But on top of that, there is no desire for that pleasant experience.
Yes, Bhante. And when the Buddha was living in Savasthi, his monastery was richly decorated by all the late people. And It is said that the whole floor was covered with most exquisite carpets, and there was nowhere to even put an additional piece.
Yeah.
So they were there with a lot of luxury, which they were not attached to, but they experienced it without desire.
Exactly. We can say so. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
So my other question is on the elements, and I have been lately trying to do that, and so that's why I'm asking you. So I watch my breathing, and I can of course see the particles of air when it gets more and more subtle, and so that is something I can experience, and also I can experience certain particles in the body. I can experience that. My question is that yes, we can experience hardness, softness when we are seated. We can experience it Buddha says hair on the head, hair on the body, teeth, nails, skin, and so forth. We can experience that. But my question is, can we actually, when we go into very deep meditation, can we penetrate beyond, like to the cell level? Is that a possibility, or is that not a possibility?
You can go to the cell level, but it is not really necessary, by the way. Now, if you are going for deep concentrations, then there's a possibility that you can even penetrate and recognize all these bodily parts. But
yes.
Buddha has given a different approach. So that is the element characteristics. So rather than we try to hold to these 32 parts, rather Buddha simplify it and give more subtle level. So that is the element characteristics. Now we are not giving the names, typical names like, say, the lungs, liver, and all these different typical names. Rather, we penetrate those typical conventional level. Rather, we try to perceive, understand very subtle, say, flux-like situation.
Yeah.
The elements. So once we looked at all these experience in the point of elements, so it's a hardness, softness, roughness, fluidity, cohesion, movement, vibration. So likewise, so we are in a very primordial level actually operating. So there you can't have a fixed thing. There is nothing solid there. There is no any permanency. Everything is in an utter kind of a fluctuation, kind of vibration, kind of flux. So that there we are getting more advanced or profound understanding. And there are no conventions here. All the typical names, labels, conventions that we mind, so these man-made conventions, all are gone. So there is nothing to attach. So everything is like a flux, like an energy.
So my question is, because even in the Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta, he talks about solidity. The Buddha talks about solidity, and he also talks about the internal parts. As students, of course, we learn those, we did those parts and all that, so I do have an understanding of it at some at a point. But when we are meditating, we can
use it to some extent. Assume that
some
you
extent,
because
I have actually touched some of those internal organs, so I can use that past knowledge, but. I don't suppose the Buddha expected everybody. I mean, he encouraged people to go to the cemetery and observe those parts. I don't know at his time, but I suppose if we stick to the head of the hair and the teeth, nails, that kind of thing, and the breath and whatever sensations we feel in like the vibrations and the particles, I suppose is that enough?
Actually it depends on the person. Suppose a person is there who is a really lustful character and constantly he is burning with lust. For such person, going to a cemetery and maybe going through this Asubha Bhavana and all these things are fairly helpful. Just to bring his mind to the middle. So once his mind is taken to the middle, again he also has to stop. Because if he engages too much, he can even go to the other side. So that is the hating of the body.
That is not expected.
So once you are able to bring your mind to the middle level, There you now need to practice Satipatthana in the more subtle level. That is where the Enneman characteristics are there, the Enneman meditation or the Dhatu Manasikara is there. So there actually in the Dhatu, you can't say it is a different component. You can't say it is liver, lungs, intestine or all these different components. Rather, they all become kind of activities even, kind of flow, vibrations. So on this situation, so the mind will completely lose the fixations. Mind can't maintain kind of a boundary of the body. So boundary is no more there. All the compactness view is broken.
But in the Dhatu Vibhanga Sutra, he talks about the solidity and the elemental characteristics, and he does mention the solid organs boundary.
That's what I mentioned. So these solid organs and the, say, 32 parts, for example. So, at the beginning, assume that a person has a very fixed view. This body is mine. This body is something. It is very valuable. It is a single component. So, but when you are sort of contemplating using 32 parts, so that level of compactness is broken. Because now there is no single unit, but now it has 32 parts. Okay, the very hard level of compactness view is broken. Now he has a 32 parts. Now he sort of has kind of a disintegrated view. Now even further we have to go using the elements. So once we are going to the elements, so it is going to pieces. I mean, it's kind of like a flux, like energy level, you can go. Now you can't even have any boundary line. You can't see even the distinction between even four elements. I mean, now at the beginning, you are recognizing different elements. That is true. That is necessary. But more and more you observe it, even the distinct differences among the elements going to disappear and all appear like a flux.
Yes.
That is, to which actually our Lokusanasi used to say like a gojaya, like a flux,
yes.
like there is no demarcations, no distinct signs. Everything is changing. Everything is in a kind of fluctuation, kind of a transience.
So I can just limit myself to those vibrations, particles, as
like enough.
The
yes,
whole body,
yes, definitely.
And try to go into the inside the body. I think I
no,
think
no, not necessary.
That.
Yeah, because the thing is, I mean, too much concentration is also not necessary. So if if we are able to recognize all these vibrations, so that is more than enough. So it's
enough.
That
is enough, because actually at the end of the day we are trying to accept that there is energy and flux and vibration, and that's all there is in this body.
Yeah. So basically, this understanding has to be again and again experienced by the mind at a given moment. At a given moment, once it is coming to some culmination, then mind will naturally let go of. So you get the point. Now, we may know all this information through science today. Even a college student may know it. But mind hasn't let go of. So what we do in meditation, in vipassana, is now we allow the mind to experience it as its own experience. In a kind of a subconscious level, so we are sort of allowing the mind to learn from this reality. So as a result, at one day, so mind will completely let go of attaching to any of these and it will become free. So this freedom is the kind of a next level of our practice.
Yes, Bhante. And when we are practicing, we do feel all those things, you know, the vibrations and all these particles. So I think because I was trying to go deeper, and I thought now that's why I wanted to clarify with you. So that is not necessary.
Not necessary. It's a matter of familiarizing. It's a matter of familiar. You know, Buddha mentioned Bhavita Bahuli Kata. I mean, we
yes.
even though we see it once, it is not enough.
Yes. No.
So we have to show it to the mind, say 100 times, million times. So then only it will become matured. The same thing
yes,
we need to do.
Yes.
I mean, today also we see it. Tomorrow also we see it, next month also we see it, next year also we see it, the same thing. But there is a kind of a maturity happens in the mind. So at that time only, it will let go of. It is like, say, you are filling a pot. Assume there's a droplet coming from a leaking tap. And you're simply keeping a vessel underneath. Only a single drop may comes out of it. Another single drop, another single drop, another single drop. But one day, the whole vessel may spill out. Same situation. Same situation here. So every day we are doing it as a daily practice. That's all. And one day, by the way, so mind may come to a culmination. And at that time, mind will let go of and it will find its own kind of a freedom. That is also not the end. I mean, that is one level of experience, actually.
So this
Bahuli Kata
is over and over. Is
exactly,
that right?
Exactly, exactly.
And Bhavita is utilizing to practice.
Practice, yeah, development, we can say.
Developing.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Right, thank you, Bhante.
Yeah,
thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah.
Thank you. And I'd like to invite Rakipa to please ask the last question.
Yes, I can hear. You can speak a little louder also.
Okay. My question is, when I'm in the school meditation, I go to this place where I'm kind of tranquilizing my mind, it's very quiet. Then I'm not seeing the defilements to let them go. But in the daily life, I can see the defilements when I'm interacting with people and even if I'm watching something. And I can practice more letting go and letting go of the desire or letting go of whatever feeling that comes into my mind. So when I'm meditating, on the other hand, it's so... it's like tranquilizing, it's so calm that I'm not seeing any hindrances to let go. So as a practice, if I'm not getting anything, should I be bringing up so that I can relate it to the Four Noble Truths as Dukkha Satya, and this is like to do Dhammanupassana, or should I do it in daily life, or should I just, how do you practice the letting go, and when you don't see the hindrances because you are very calm,
yeah,
and your thoughts are very, you're not involved in the thoughts.
Yeah, so basically
so
that is, yeah, I mean, yeah, daily practice is a solution, because you know, In the typical sitting session, so we are too prepared in a way. So mind is fairly concentrated, too prepared, so no defilements are coming. But on the other hand, in the daily practice, we are moving with others, we are, say, looking here and there. And as a result, there's a higher possibility that mind get involved. Mind again
yes.
generate various defilements and hindrances. So then and there, we need to recognize, by the way. So we have to be on guard. We have to be on guard of, on our mind. So there we recognize, okay, there is a lust, there is a resentment, there is a restlessness, there is a regret, there is a doubt. So
yes.
likewise, so
yes.
then and there we need to recognize.
So in the daily meditation, I shouldn't bring it up from my memory, right, to practice. No, I should let it remain in that calm position as long as I can.
Well, it depends actually. So say, assume that a person who is a beginner, so they are assume that he is simply practicing, started his practice and he is keeping his attention on the breath, And suppose after a couple of weeks, so his breath calms down. Okay, so this is one level of experience. So that is also he has to experience. And at this moment, probably, so this collected mind, the one-pointed mind, can be used to observe various phenomena. So rather than spending long time in this calmness, now one can use the collectedness, the one-pointedness of the mind to observe various phenomena. So that way we can take advantage. But on the other hand, on the other hand, assume that another person, he continues his observation for a long time. He has its own concentration. Using that concentration, he is observing his various bodily phenomena, various feelings, etc., etc. And at one day, assume that everything calmed down again. So now there are no bodily pains, there are no hindrances, the mind also has calmed down. There is nothing to attach. The mind is in a kind of a peace. So this peace has to be familiarized with. So you may experience it only for 1 minute, 2 minutes, that is not enough. That you need to cultivate, that you need to expand. Say for 15 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, 1 hour. Maybe 1 hour is a good time. So to 1 hour, you need to familiarize with this calmness. So this is a kind of a letting go type of stage. Where there is nothing to hold, mind has fairly become free, nothing to attach. As a result, mind is calm. Mind is experiencing some sort of a stillness. So this has to be familiarized with. So therefore, it depends on one's practice that we need to, how to operate on this kind of a calmness.
Right. So if by chance I'm getting that only in about 30, 40 minutes, I should continue it, right?
So assume that you have experiences a lot of observations. So you did a lot of observing. So you observed various pains, you observed various element characteristics, you observed various thoughts coming and going, etc., etc. And as a result of this observation, you understood they have the impermanent nature. They are simply coming and going. They are not permanent. They are not coming to stay. Rather, they simply go. So you have this as a kind of a profound understanding. If you have that understanding developed internally, and as a result, mind has now let go of everything without attaching, now you may be able to experience kind of a calmness, peacefulness in the mind. So if this is the peacefulness that you are talking, that is well and good, and you need to familiarize with it.
I'm not really sure because sometimes it's coming very fast. Sometimes before that I'm having thoughts and it takes a while.
Uh-huh.
Some days it's very quickly I go to that calm state.
So that is the point. I mean, we need to be a little careful here because so it could be a kind of concentration state. So concentration, now you know there are five faculties. Saddha, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, Panya. So among these five faculties, we have to well balance mindfulness, concentration and wisdom. So these three faculties we need to properly balance. So if we lead to very higher concentrated states immediately, so the mind simply loses or loosen the mindfulness and wisdom and immediately go to those concentrated states. So those are not that beneficial.
Right.
So therefore, better you improve your, say, walking meditation, and then and there you observe various phenomena, element characteristics, and assume that while you are observing that, if mind has completely let go of all those, even in the walking meditation, you are able to maintain kind of a free mind. So that is a good situation. It is not kind of a concentration, deep concentration. Rather, you have experienced various bodily phenomena, various element characteristics, various thoughts, and they also have come and gone. You haven't attached to them. You have understood that they have the nature to come and go. And as a result, everything has ceased. now you are experiencing some sort of a peacefulness in the mind. So this we can say you gain through proper practice, not kind of a concentration practice, rather.
Right. Thank you very much, Mahdi. I understand.
Yeah. Okay. I think we are running out of time. Someone else also has raised their hand.
Yes, Bante, would you like to take one more question?
Or? I can spend 1 minute, maybe.
Okay. Yeah. Darshika, please unmute your microphone. Darshika, you were unmuted for a moment, and then looks like you are muted again.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Sorry, I did quickly. This is the situation I experienced a few weeks ago. I couldn't really handle this situation the way I want it. So I want some advice how should I handle this better. So the situation is, recently I experienced an abdominal pain. So as the pain was getting intensified, I closely watched it. I thought that the pain was originating with the pressure, started with pressure, and this pressure got more and more and then turned into pain. It was like as if people were pushing through a door, a single door in a room where there was lots of sound. When they pushed out, the pain subsided. So the pressure intensified, became less, and then the pain suddenly got it went down, and then another day, so forth it happened. And then also at the same time, the pain was moving from one place to another. So, but the pain didn't subside, it was getting worse. And finally, I had to go to hospital and I had searched with patients identified. But I thought I had handled the pain well. And following surgery, 2 days or so, I was looking at the pain and it was not so bad because it was not as bad as the initial pain. And on the third day, I still had some pain. And then I couldn't handle it anymore. I really broke down because I was thinking, why is it happening to me all the time, by me? And I was even feeling jealous of the people who didn't have pain. And I was, this is not my pain, but, and also it is due to the cause and effect. But I couldn't handle it anymore because the video, the effort I took was either too much. Trying to control it, I don't know what happened. I knew that this was not my pain. I couldn't handle it. So when times like that happen, how should I react?
Yeah, so actually, as you have mentioned, so the moment that you recognize, so there's a desire and you are trying to possess the pain and you are claiming this pain as my pain, why it is happening to me, all others are quite comfortable, why it is happening to me. So that is where we are intensifying the pain. So that is where sort of increasing and that is where we really suffer. But rather, if we are able to avoid doing that, simply seeing pain as pain while keeping it to the limiting it only to the physical pain without making any mental component out of it, so that is where we can stop suffering. So that is what we try to discuss today in the teaching session. So as much as possible, we need to look at it, all these suffering, objectively, without claiming them, without possessing them, without making it mine. So that way, I mean, pains are always there. The physical pains are always there. So we don't need to have a mental component out of them.
Yes, but Bhante, is it hypnosis was going on for 3 days, and I had really tried my level best to handle pain and stillness.
Yeah.
It was my, like last time, how you probably explained this out of the system bonus for younger. You said, Priya, suppress them about the fucking, yes, I forget the three components exactly now. Should I take and just instead and done something else? Would I be better, or still would I have to pursue an answer?
Actually, you can take kind of a middle approach where, say, to some extent you can use pain as much as possible to learn from it, to understand its impermanent nature, etc. Assume that it is intensifying, you can't bear it, then you can actually, you can change your posture, you can get up and go for a walking, and likewise, you have to, you know, without going through, I mean, if you can go through this pain, that is fine. That is something that some people are actually doing. But it is not the only approach. So you can actually change the posture, and you can even see how the existing pain now calms down. It is now disappearing because of the change of the posture. And probably even you can watch the mind. So likewise, you can use in, you can play in a kind of a wide range. And it is not necessary to see only one option is there, but there are many options available.
So I did the mind pasna there. I thought of the situation, why am I not facing this pain, but because I'm expecting too much like that.
Yeah.
So I should have maybe I got up and walked. I did that as well, but I think I was exhausted because it was been 3 days that I couldn't handle observing. So that's why I thought I lasted the day.
Yeah. So I think, yeah, so you can maintain some balance in the practice. So if you are struggling with it for a long time, that also give you kind of a strenuous type of experience. That is also not that balance. So rather, you time to time, you will kind of relaxed experience, you go for a walk and again calm down. And, you know, I mean, that way you are able to balance the practice. So rather than every day going through some severe pain and you are struggling with it every day and it's a kind of a battle every day. So sometimes people take that approach, but it is not a must, by the way. So you can get a kind of a balanced approach where you persevere to some extent and as much as possible. And then suppose you change the posture and again you see how the pains are disappearing. And now there are new types of pains. I mean, there may be mild pains. Now you are observing them. So, I mean, the observation is the important thing. It is not, we can't say that you have to observe the very, very higher, severe kind of pain in order to understand. It is not so. Because all the pains are, I mean, coming and going. They have the changing nature. So this changing nature, the coming and going nature, they are transient nature. So this is the lesson that we are trying to learn. Not their intensity, by the way. So with that, actually, we will conclude today's session. We will recite the traditional verses. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sambe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Akasattha ca bummattha deva naga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu sasanam. Akasattha ca bummattha deva naga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu desanam. Akasattha ca bummattha deva naga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu mam param. Idang vo nyati nang ho tu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idang vo nyati nang ho tu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idang vo nyati nang ho tu sukita huntu nyatayo. Imina punya kamme na mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo ho tu yavanibbana pattiya. Imina punya kamme na mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo ho tu yavanibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya sadu sadu sadu.